Hey, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of the Plucking Up podcast. We are breaking from our typical kind of interview format to do more of a topical co-hosted conversation about the Barbie movie. And I'm having this conversation with my friend Ken. Because listen, if you have a real life friend named Ken, you're like morally obligated to talk about the Barbie movie with him, right? Okay, obviously I'm pretty much kidding about that, but I am having this conversation with my friend Ken. You may be wondering, who on earth is Ken? And I will tell you that Ken and his wife Lindsay and their four amazing kids have been family friends of Ben and I's for a long time. Ken's vocation is a little bit hard to explain, but he is basically a professional mentor, strategist, coach, and friend. And for those of you who follow me personally, you know that over the last few years, I've had some really significant shifts and transition in my life and in my work. What you likely saw from the outside was the decision to merge my company, Seiko Designs, with our biggest competitor, Noonday Collection. What, of course, you didn't see behind the scenes was, you know, the hundreds, probably thousands of hours that went into this transitional season of my life, spent wrestling and strategizing and planning and designing and deciding. This was one of the bigger transitional seasons of my life, both personally and professionally. And really through that process, Ken became one of the key people that I relied on for strategy, for feedback, for input, and honestly, just for really great question asking. So Ken actually has this multi-day intensive that he has developed and designed specifically for people going through big life transitions. And so for a few days, I sat with Ken in his office and we turned over literally every rock that there was to turn over. I mean, y'all, everything from, I don't know, childhood moments to my goals, my hopes, my dreams, my fears, as we wrestled through what it looks like to design a life of purpose and passion and impact going into this new season. And I am not exaggerating when I say that the clarity, the confidence, the peacefulness that I had when I emerged from this two-day intensive was invaluable. Well, Ken has become not only a valuable business and life and work strategist and colleague, but honestly, one of my very dear friends. And the other day we were in a meeting and he was dropping me off. And as he was dropping me off, I remembered that he had just taken his entire family to go see the Barbie movie. And I was really interested in hearing his perspective. One, because I'm usually interested in hearing Ken's take on things. But two, because while I had talked to at least a dozen or so of my female friends about the movie, I had yet to hear from a guy about their experience watching the Barbie movie. I mean, let alone a guy named Ken. So right after I kind of casually asked him his thoughts about the movie, I was like, wait. What if we actually record this conversation? And then if we decide we want to, we share it with the Plucking Up community. And Ken agreed. So as I mentioned today, we are breaking our standard Plucking Up format. And instead, we are doing more of a co-hosted topical show about the billion-dollar Barbie phenomenon. $1 billion, over $1 billion, y'all. I mean, Barbie, Taylor, and Beyonce are just propping up the U.S. economy this summer, y'all. I mean, talk about a summer of female-created entertainment for the books. Overall, I really did love the Barbie movie. I think Greta Gerwig is a genius. I am really glad the film exists, and I am tickled by its absolutely wild success. And of all the movies in the box office right now, I don't even really know what the other ones are. My guess is that ideologically, I am most glad that this one exists. So on the one hand, I kind of hate to create the space to offer actually some of the ways in which I was let down in my critiques of the film, because I'm sure there is so much trash out there that I would have way more to critique. But often it is the most useful, culturally relevant, ambitious, and valuable pieces of art that draw our feedback and actually create fodder for the best, most meaningful conversation. So here we are. Without further ado, Ken, would you like to say hello to the Plucking Up audience?
Hello, everybody. And I'm really excited to have this conversation, not only with a whole bunch of other people listening, but you and I have not talked about this at all whatsoever. So I have no idea where this is going to go, which is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. So get your boxing gloves on. It's about to get feisty. Just kidding. One of the things that I love about Ken and I and our friendship is I feel like we both have a real passion for dialogue and for conversation and for sharing different experiences and doing it with curiosity, clarity, courage. Not that this, I'm acting like we're about to talk about some really highly sensitive topic, and it's literally the Barbie movie. So there might be some stuff that comes up, but probably not. So, all right, here we go. Ken, I'm gonna put it on you to start. Your key, just like, and again, we did not map this out. We weren't like, what's our top 3 points to share? But when I asked you that question in the car the other day, what bubbles up to you first?
My kids the entire time, because I took my 16-year-old son, my 14-year-old daughter, my 13-year-old son, and I believe my 11-year-old son to it. So I had all these kind of kids that were watching this for the first time, and they were not like big like Barbie, like they didn't play with a lot of Barbies, but they were really excited to see the movie. And I also told them that I wasn't going to take them to go see Oppenheimer. So it was really like that or nothing. So they all said yes to that. And they thought it was so funny that all the men in the movie were named Ken. And because that's my name, that was pretty comical to them. And then obviously, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've seen the movie. My middle name is Alan, and the only other male in the entire movie is Alan. And so the entire time I'm watching this, I just had this very odd personal connection to it. Like, we're all Ken. And so, like, when I Am Knuff came up, I'm, like, Googling, like, I want that, and I don't want anyone else to have it. Like, I don't want, like, my son's middle name is Danger, and there's people that wear shirts that are like, Danger's my middle name. And I'm like, no, it really is his. And so when I saw that I Am Knuff, I'm like, oh, that's for me, and I don't want to see every male in the world wearing it. So initially I had a very light and playful approach to it. I actually was super really kind of blown away. I don't know what your first thoughts are when you heard that the movie was coming out, but I really thought it was going to be pretty, not knowing anything, not knowing the script, not knowing the producer, not knowing any of the things. I just hear Barbie movie, and I just thought, oh, this is just going to be something that's going to be like, you know, fodder for the next McDonald's Happy Meal toy, like just kind of like a throwaway movie. And what I thought was so interesting is our whole family went out to eat afterward, and we talked the entire dinner about the movie, and when we talked late into the night about the movie afterward. And for me, that's part of what makes a good movie. Like, I used to, back in the day, before I met my wife, I think I went on probably like 3 total dates before that with other people. But like, a movie was always one of my favorite things to go do because, you know, you're kind of like, you know, hopefully not only was like something to go experience together, but then the conversations afterward. And so I was amazed how much conversations that I had with my kids about it and that they wanted to have about it. And they had really like visceral reactions to it. So that part was really fun. So overall, I really loved it from the perspective of thought provoking, brought out really strong feelings, challenged some things. And so that was probably my strongest reaction, was just the, whoa, that's my name. And then, like, wow, I love that this movie was able to bring up that much dialogue and that much thoughtful interaction. So that was probably, like, just my first interaction with the movie. What about you?
Well, I want to ask a follow-up question to what is the part of the conversation that your kids felt most passionate about or that, like, came up first or most vigorously in the Weigel family conversation?
Yeah, I think right away, like, the conversation was this idea of the ending felt really different. Like, I think they all were tracking with, like, okay, here's the setup, and then here's the twist, and then now what are we creating as that, like, back in the day, I used to work with some folks that as we would tell stories, we'd kind of talk about this, like, old story, and then this thing that would happen, and then this new story. And so I think we all were planning on, like, what's that new story was going to be, and I think the deviation from what the new story ended up being compared to what they thought it was going to be, I think ended up being like the fodder for most of that conversation. Like, I think they saw, like, here's what it was, and then here's this whole entire thing that happened with Ken and how everything changed, and then what's this, like, this, how are we going to, like, land this plane? Like, where is this going to go to? And I think where it landed was just really different than where I thought some of them either thought it was going to land or thought it should have landed. And so I think that was just the initial spark of just like, oh my gosh, I want to talk about this, just because it ended so much differently than I think they were initially hoping it to.
Say more about where it landed, and then say more about where they were hoping it would land.
I think that there was this whole idea that at the very beginning, it was this world that was this like kind of like very dominated world, dominated by Barbie, and everything kind of was going around them. And I think as my kids watched that, they saw it as like kind of like, okay, you have this world where they're thriving, or they were thriving up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And then, but Ken really wasn't thriving. Like all the men really weren't thriving. And so then there was this like power grab of like, all right, we're going to take some power back. And they took all of the power back. And so then the idea of like, cool, well, what would be a great resolution? I thought that I think in their minds, they were thinking something that felt more shared, something that felt a little bit more like where both sides would have like a place and have like a place to be. And there would be some like equality within that, I think, is what they were initially thinking. I think that they kind of like had this, a lot of their visceral reactions felt like a justice issue. I was just really more interested in the fact of like them bringing, I thought Weird Barbie was beautiful. I thought them bringing up both like what Barbie did in a positive way and what Barbie did in a very negative way, and not having either one cancel out the other, I thought was really a beautiful statement. But then I think there were other some things that they like unearthed, I was like, that is so cool that you're getting into it. And then other parts that they dove into, I was pretty like, oh, that's a shame that we just had to like leave that right there. Like, I feel like there was a lot more to that. I feel like that could have gone a lot further as a whole.
Did you say Lucy and all the boys saw it? Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a significant difference in how Lucy experienced the movie compared to the boys?
No. Hmm. And I'm not, you know, and maybe if I would, if when we were like talking about it all and I said like, someday dad's going to be on a podcast and he's going to get asked who, you know, maybe they would have said something a little bit different. But in the moment, I think all of them just had this idea that, man, I wish that we weren't just going back. I think often we have this idea of like, let's just go back to the way that it was. And if we can go back to the way that it was, it'll be better. And oftentimes when we do that, we forget how things were back then for other parts that weren't the star in that moment. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but there's a few.
Yeah, me neither. Nothing.
Yeah. And so the idea of like, we've got to bring this back to this other thing, I think was just kind of, you know, I'm sure it was very intentional because most of the movie really was. But that just felt like, I think as my kids watch it, that just felt like a really big miss of like, man, let's create a new way forward. Let's just not go back to exactly like necessarily the way that it was.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so interesting. And I'm feeling a little bit like, oh, that's so exciting because a lot of those thoughts are thoughts that I had, and then a little bit like, oh wow, I thought I had really interesting, unique thoughts on the film, and they were the same as teenagers that went to go see the movie. But they are very special, smart teenagers, so there we go. But I went into it probably with the opposite thing, feeling like it was going to be this really interesting, really powerful social commentary because of the director, because of a few things that I had read. I knew it was going to be about, I at least knew that there was kind of this general concept of taking down the patriarchy or acknowledging it in a really interesting way. So I think I actually went in being like, this is going to blow my mind. Like, this is going to be, and this is like, hello, I want to eat this for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And this is going to give me a new thought or idea or kind of push me intellectually. And I didn't feel that. I felt a little bit, and again, that's not to say that the movie was bad at all. First of all, just to say it, 11 out of 10 went for me when it came to cinematography, costumes, casting, production. I was just absolutely blown away and so delighted. And the overall arc of the story, I also thought was really interesting. There was some kind of different, you know, like going into the real world, Ken seeing the patriarchy for the first time and being like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And then coming back and how that impacted society, all of it. I thought it was cool. It was interesting. I found in myself, I kept waiting for the moment that you were talking about. I kept waiting for, I think one of the phrases that I use is this idea of a third way. Third way thinking is my favorite way of thinking. Because there are so many things in culture, in society, in the world where it's like, you're either this or this. It's either this or this. You believe you're either for this or against this. And I often think that the most innovative, powerful, unifying ways to solve problems and to think about things are a third way, where it's like, it's actually not this or that. There is a third way of solving this problem, of thinking about this. And so I think I had in my head that the Barbie movie was going to give us the third way. And what I found, which is exactly what you and your kids kind of reflected on, it was really just a picture of opposites. It was like, we're going to take a reality, we're going to switch the characters, and we're just going to play that out. And I think there's usefulness in that, right? It's like, I think there is something inherently useful about specifically, no, I think for men and women to just simply flip the script. I think you can do that in gender. I think that you can do that in race. I think that you can do that in so many different of these kind of like identifying things. It's so helpful to go, would this stand out to me if I flipped the script? There's actually a whole Instagram account that I follow. I actually can't remember what it is right now, but they just do memes. Like the whole thing is just memes, things that women often say are said about them, and they literally just flip it. That's all they do is they make it men focused, and it's really powerful. You can see and understand a dynamic that has become so normalized to you, and then the moment you kind of switch the script or switch the player, you go like, well, that's a silly thing to say. Obviously, nobody believes that. And so I feel like this movie did that, that it was like a powerful way to simply kind of flip the script. And I think it's enough. Like, this is not a critique. I think the money that was spent on this film and the money that this film has garnered was all very well spent. And if that could lead to men and women simply just acknowledging, like it felt more like a problem statement than an interesting solution to me, where it was like, right, the goal of the movie was to just simply highlight the problem in a way that was clever, that was entertaining, that was satirical. And there is value in that, to just calling it what it is and saying, we have a problem here. Like, this isn't the best for anybody. But I found myself feeling a little bit disappointed that there wasn't a next and kind of resolution, because to your point, it really did feel like the resolution is, ha ha ha, women just have the power now and men are going to be in the position that women have been, and are you going to like that? And I think that's why it kind of gave me this sense of like, oh man, one, I just feel a little bit let down that there wasn't a third way presented. Two, and maybe this is like catering too much to like male fragility. I don't know if that's an actual word. I'm obviously playing off of the term of white fragility, of me going like, what I don't love about that is, to me, it reinforces the us versus them narrative that I feel like is one of the primary forces that's keeping progress and change from happening. Because I think when we kind of stoke that flame of like, our gain is going to be your loss,
right,
versus, hey, if I'm empowered, if I'm treated with dignity, if I have options and I can dream and I can do, I'm going to be better off and you're going to be better off. Like, we're all going to be better off together, which I understand can sound Pollyanna or kumbaya-ish, but I just deeply believe it. Like, one of my most deeply held beliefs that I don't talk about that much unless it comes up on the podcast with a guest, I feel like sometimes I lead the witness there because I love talking about it so much, is this idea that patriarchy is bad for all of us. And I think a lot of people have this notion that patriarchy is bad for women. Women are oppressed. There is violence against women. There is lost opportunity. There is, you know, all of these things. It's bad for women. And it must be good for men. They're winning. They're doing pretty well. And I fundamentally have this belief that a human cannot have an ideology or a worldview that fundamentally dehumanizes, disgraces, oppresses, marginalizes, excludes another people group, and for that ideology to not harm the brain and the heart and the spirit of the person who carries that ideology. I feel the same thing about like racism and white supremacy, right? Like, obviously, white supremacy protects a specific power structure that benefits white people. So in a lot of ways, white people are benefiting from white supremacy or from racism in certain ways. When we think about economic opportunity, when we think about owning land, when we think about power, when we think about education, all of these things. But we're not really addressing the soul in that. And like, my belief is that if you are a white person who holds the belief that white people are intrinsically better than people of color, that is degrading to your soul and to your being and the life that you were created to live. You're not going to get there with that belief. And I think I was really hoping, for this moment in the movie where Ken realized, ooh, this thing that I initially grabbed for, that I was like, ooh, yeah, like this seems awesome. Patriarchy is rad. I wanted to see him live out the patriarchy and then come to this moment where he was like, this isn't life to the fullest. Like, this isn't the best that we can do.
Right, right.
And I think I was just kind of like disappointed, because I think part of the gender equality conversation that doesn't happen enough, we talk a lot about what areas of the economy or the world or society are women intrinsically excluded from, and that's sexism. What we don't talk about are, what are the areas of society that men are actually kind of excluded from? And I was thinking about this the other day. I was literally chaperoning a trip to the coast with my kids on a field trip. And very, very common situation for many of us who have children elementary school aged, not a single male teacher, not a single male chaperone, not a single dad on that trip. And I remember having the thought, so it was all female adults and then a bunch of 50-50, you know, boys and girls. And I remember driving home from the coast and my thought was, man, that trip was great. That was super fun. And this is no shade. These like teachers and these administrators literally should get paid a lot more, and they run, they're amazing. And I was like, that trip would have been really different and fun if there would have been more men on it. Like, especially, I mean, for the boys and the girls, but it's just kind of like, oh, what, how would the dynamic have changed? How would the little boys have experienced that or had somebody to connect with or guide them? But early childhood education and lots of things in the kind of childhood primary caregiver space, a lot of men are actually pretty excluded from. And I think those spaces would be better with more male energy, more male involvement. But I just think it's interesting that as a culture, like, you walk into a boardroom that's all white 50-year-old men, and I think we're at a point in culture where we can see that and go, you're kind of missing out. Like, you're really missing out on a perspective, on experience, on, you know, a way of being by not having women in this space. And my question is, why don't we bristle the same way when we enter into a space that's primarily dominated by women and go, huh, like, you're probably missing out on some energy, some perspective, because a whole certain people group has kind of been excluded from this space.
I completely agree with you. I think that the hard part is to be, I mean, it has been hard, if not impossible, for women to go into those areas that were just a bunch of men and to walk in and go, hey, I'd like to be here. Had to have felt impossible, if not just like, you know, just a very painful experience, probably marked by mostly no's or just real a whole bunch of other assumptions that are not true. And the idea that the men both didn't want them there, don't need them there, wouldn't be benefited by having them there is just, I think we would all look at that and go, that's so foolish. I just felt like it just fell short in is nobody got to go on that journey of going like, actually, it's actually way better mm-hmm. if we're together and we actually take care of one another. Mm-hmm. And that felt like, in fact, the only time that it really happened is it had to be stolen. Like Barbie had it taken from her. Ken had to have it taken from him. All the men had mm-hmm. to be ripped from their hands in order to have it happen. And then what we came to is like this, like, instead of it being 100-0, it'll be 90-10 or 95-10 and we'll be good with it. And then Barbie going, I want to do my own thing. And she just takes off. But there was never this idea that was like, what if just our solution as a whole is just like a flawed solution? Mm-hmm. And that's actually, that's one of the places that I didn't believe the movie at the very beginning is that, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about like, you know, the opposite of, you know, patriarchy, you know, or what matriarchy is not just patriarchy on the other side. That there would actually be like, no, it would mean we'd have different values and different things. Like, it wouldn't just be mm-hmm. the exact same thing replicated with just different genders in those places. And what was interesting to me about it was watching how poor Barbie's emotional IQ was to Ken at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is stereotypical. Now, I can't, was that trying to portray stereotypical women, stereotypical Barbie? I don't know. But just the idea of like, this is stereotypical, fill in the blank. And we have zero emotional ability to know what's happening in the other people around it just felt so false to me. Like, that just felt like Ken was obviously hurting. He was obviously feeling disregarded. He was obviously feeling, and that's a feeling that for so many women has felt visceral to them. Of like, does it even matter if I'm here? Does anybody even care? I'm here when you need me. I mean, that has been a story for women for longer than I would even know. And so the idea that then when that's being experienced on the other side, the idea that Barbie is just completely obtuse to that just feels like you're using, that just doesn't feel true to my experience.
So you're saying it doesn't feel true to, like, if women actually were in power, you believe that there would be a level of emotional intelligence, empathy, and inclusion actually that was hyperbolically, like, not represented truthfully. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, I think we often think, like, if one party was the lead, then they'd go after X. And if we're in the lead, then we go after X.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just fundamentally believe that, like, it is really possible that, like, patriarchy went after something that women might not go after that same thing.
Yeah.
That it's not just going to be like, oh, well, we're just going to get power and money and control and dominate. They might actually go like, what if it was about flourishing? Like, I do this exercise with people where I look at, there was this, I think it was a study from a prestigious, like, university. I heard it for the first time from, I believe, Arthur Brooks brought it up, but it was just this whole idea of kind of this, like, portfolio lifestyle of, like, you know, like, I want to equally value everything from my family and my family lives and friendships and a really rich vocation and a faith that I'm a part of something bigger than myself. And when we actually invest in those four areas, it's actually a richer life. And what I've found is I've worked with hundreds of individuals over the year. Men have a much easier time just going all in on one of those. Mm-hmm. And women have just an easier time going like, that feels foolish. I need to be investing in all of these. To go all in on just one feels like I'm just losing way more than I'm gaining by the other. And so I even just think there's just something really interesting about in the movie, how binary they made that movie.
Yeah.
That I thought was going to be an opportunity to be so richly nuanced and be able to talk about that. And that just felt the inherent binary within the entire movie, from you're either a Ken or a Barbie or you're this or that, like the binariness of it, was I actually believe part of the really quirky, cool, niche part of it and its greatest flaw.
Okay, I really love that. And I think I really agree with this sense that human flourishing, the portfolio life, and that human flourishing happens when we're investing in these different areas. I want to go back to this comment that I made about men being excluded from certain spaces. There's a really big difference. Let's use these two examples, the boardroom and the field trip. The difference is, a woman could give her entire life and not get in that room and be told no, be told, you know, excuses, be told whatever, whatever, whatever. There's no space for you here. A man could sign up for the field trip and won. Not only is he going to be told, yes, absolutely. But he's also going to be seen as some sort of hero for doing the thing that millions and trillions of women do day in and day out. But because a man does it, it's like, wow, he's such an amazing involved dad. And that's actually really infuriating. So I do just want to acknowledge that the level of being excluded is super different for men and women, because men actually have, typically, they have access. They're not being told no. Where I see the exclusion happening is in the desire to be seen in a certain way, and that as a society, we have said, in order to be a likable, lovable, desirable woman, this is what it looks like. In order to be a likable, lovable, desirable man, this is what it looks like. And I think in culture, we haven't quite gotten to a point where the availability for those options are the same for men as they are for women. So for instance, there was a study done that showed two different resumes, the exact same resumes, but they changed the name on the resume. And the resume shows a lot of power, a lot of success, a lot of ambition. And they had people look at the resumes. And then after looking at the resumes, they did like a likability test. How much do you like this person? How much do you want to be their friend? How much do you want to like sit next to them at the cocktail party? Whatever it is. And what they found is that when a man's name was on the resume of success, power, and ambition, his likability factor, pretty through the roof. People are like, this is a guy I want to know. And he's worth, you know, I want him to be my friend. I want to do business with him. I want to sit next to him at the dinner party. What they found is when literally the only thing that was changed, I think maybe it was like Harry to Harrietta or something, was that the likability scores were very low. People were like, you know, she might be successful, but she's probably like not that fun to be around. She probably is really intense. She probably isn't that warm. She probably wouldn't be that great of a friend. I probably wouldn't enjoy being around her that much. That's really powerful. Like, I think one of the core belongings, or excuse me, the core beliefs and desires of all humans is to be loved and to be liked. Totally. And to want to belong. So we're talking, I'm talking more about a psychological, sociological exclusion for men that is different than just exclusion on every level for women. But I do think about that, you know, the opposite of that would be, I had a friend who was a stay-at-home dad. And it just made sense in their family, like his passions, his gifts, where he wanted to spend his time and his energy, his family's passions and gifts. It made sense that she was going to work full time and he was going to be a stay-at-home dad. And he just talked about the experience of literally daily, weekly at least, right? Like being on the playground with all other female caregivers and, you know, kind of having conversation. And the amount of times that he heard something insinuating, well, obviously you're out of work. Like, obviously right. You didn't choose to do this. There's something kind of bad probably happened because you're at the playground at 11 a.m. on a Thursday. And just like the intrinsic shame, like disappointment, you know, this sense of like, no one wants to hang out with me. Like, I'm not likable. I'm not lovable. I'm not aspirational. And I just think that there's the opposite side of that, I think, happening to men, that there are a whole host of choices that are available to them in the way that they're not available to women, but the kind of psychological, emotional, will I be liked? Will I be loved? Will people look up to me if I make these choices? I think that's like, I think it's pretty powerful. And I think it takes a really strong person to hear that day in and day out, week in and week out, and maintain a sense of like, no, this is my calling. This is my vocation. I love it. I choose it. I'm good at it. I drive value, you know, for my kids, for the community. This works within my marriage. It takes a very strong person. And to be a man, not to toot your own horn, but I feel like you do this so well. And I think it's part of the reason you have built a life. You are building a portfolio life. Like, I think you're like, hey, vocation and career matter so much to me and I have a lot to offer. And you are a primary driver of caregiving, of family culture, of being super emotionally available to your kids, supporting your wife, cultivating your marriage. Like, you've taken a real leadership role in an area of life that often is something that women feel like they're kind of carrying on their own. And I think in doing that, you probably faced more challenges than someone like me, who naturally every woman I know is trying to cultivate a life of kind of being faithful to, you know, not, that was so hyperbolic, not every woman, most of the women that I hang out with, right, are like, no, I want to be a faithful and present and great mom and, you know, and in my vocation. And they're building the portfolio life in a way that I feel like is much more, there's more community support for it from one another because we're all trying to do the same thing. Whereas like, you're more unique to men that I know.
Yeah. The thing that I would say, the thing that is interesting to me about all of that being totally true and knowing a lot of the women that, you know, I would echo that as being true. I think that the interesting thing though, is that, and this is, I think this is going to tie into what we were just talking about and the movie. What I've found is when you actually, in a really like authentic and great way, invite somebody into a different way of thinking and going like, what if it could be this? What if it didn't have to be that way where it's just all career this? What if, would you ever want to do that? Like I see everyone, man, woman, go, tell me more. I want to hear more about this. I feel like I was stuck in a way of thinking like it had to be this. You're telling me there's a third way. Tell me more about that third way. I very rarely find someone who's just dying to defend this way. Now, maybe that's just the people that I hang out with, or by the time they get to me, they're more at a place where they really want to have those conversations. But, and that's what I think was so missing from that movie, was this invitation to a third way. And it can be everything from a third way of parenting to a third way of doing power dynamics within a household, but a third way of doing all those kind of things. But I believe anytime you get stuck into a, this is how it has to be for a particular, whatever it is, a gender, a role, anything like that, I just think that that inherently will bring problems. And I think some people are wired like that to think of it. But I think what I've found is most people are actually really wired to be receptive to things like that. And I believe that's why I think what you went into the movie, I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of people listen to you in general, is you are looking to go, what if we could do this a third way? What if we could do community a different way? What if we could do possessions a different way? What if we could do a lot of things like that? And I'm not trying to just like deconstruct everything, but I think anytime something's not working and going like, this isn't functioning the way that it's going, that when you just flip the paradigm to the exact extreme opposite, I've never seen that to work ever anywhere. And in fact, actually, I think that just goes into that all or nothing thinking that so many people suffer with and is crippling. All or nothing thinking keeps people stuck. I was with a couple a while ago that it was like, is it A or B? And they've been stuck on A or B of how they were going to move forward for years. And nothing was moving. And so until we created C and D and E and eventually like F, and we were like, oh, this could be a way. But it was just that idea of like, and so sometimes it's just that type of thinking of like, it's one or the other. I just think gets us stuck. And that's what I hated about, you know, Barbie's fantasy world. Like it was just like, let's just bounce on our, you know, have a little dance party for 4 hours at night every night, and that's going to be happy. Or the male version where it was just like, I don't even know what they were doing in those Casa del...
The dojo mojo. That was amazing.
Like, that would be, like, cool for, like, maybe 20 minutes. Yeah. And then you pretty quickly you'd be like, this is lame.
That's where I thought that they were going to go. Like, that's where I thought they were, like, going to show here's patriarchy really living it out, and that there was going to be a moment where the Kens were like, I think there's something richer, better, more fulfilling to life. I am going to say, if we end up publishing this podcast, which we don't even know if we're going to, and people end up liking it, I would advocate that our second show that we do, because I'm being mindful of time, is actually around co-ed culture, relationships, because it's something we both think about a lot and I think care a lot about, but it does still feel like, especially depending on what kind of subculture you come from. And Ken and I both come from a subculture that has a faith tradition element. And so I think for people that also have grown up or experienced, you know, church culture, religious culture, faith culture, there's an entirely different element that gets put on co-ed spaces. And then I think there's a really rich conversation to be had about why non-mixed spaces are really valuable, because I think it's both, and I think there's a third way. There's a place for them. And also, I think we could be thinking a lot more creatively and hopefully about these spaces, and that if you're not, you really are missing out. Okay, this is already getting long, so we might cut this. But to take us back to Barbie, there's something else I want to verbally process. And I wish this would actually be a time where I wish I had a group. I wish if there was a room full of women in this room to hear me say this, because I'm open and willing to be challenged on this. And I think it's not a very popular thing to say, but I'm going to say it on the internet instead. So there's this amazing speech by America Ferrera in the movie where she kind of talks about just how impossible it is to be a woman. And I can't remember all of it, but, you know, it's, you've got to be pretty, but you have to not act like you're trying to be pretty, and you've got to have leadership skills and take control and initiative, but you can't be seen as like bossy or overpowering. Just like this litany of just impossible dynamics that is very true to how so many women feel, just absolutely, I cannot win, in a way that frankly I think is real for women that isn't so real for men. I think the tightrope that men are asked to walk, not necessarily that it's going to lead to a thriving life, but there are just these impossible dynamics that women face. So I want to say that's true and that's real, and there's an injustice there, and that we should not stop. And I feel like I kind of have the freedom. I could be wrong about this. I kind of want to own the freedom that I have being someone who, it's like, I give my literal entire life to creating opportunities for women and girls globally. Like, I am going to be the last person who ever diminishes the reality that women and girls across the globe are oppressed, are marginalized, are taken advantage of, and that I'm going to spend the rest of my life on this belief that girls deserve dignity. And I want to challenge us, specifically here as women. When I was listening to America's speech, I was like, yes, and yes, I grew up reading magazines and watching shows and hearing things and getting feedback that all affirmed what you're talking about. And it's and it creates a real mental and emotional challenge for women. And at what point do we say these psychological, emotional challenges that we're facing hold the power over us to the degree to which we allow them to hold the power over us? Like, I a little bit found myself being like, woo, woo, go America. That's so true. That's so unfair. And then there was this other very real part of me that was like, but what if I just said F that? Like, what if I just decided, I'm not going to pick that up. I'm not going to put that on. In a way that I feel like there's still a lot of like deeply embedded patriarchal beliefs that I have that create challenges for me. There are also a dozen things that I could think of where I feel like I've just gone, I'm just like not going to play that game. That's a stupid tightrope for somebody to have to walk. And I'm just saying, I'm not playing by the rules of that game. And just kind of wanting to open up that conversation about how much of it is changing the external circumstances of the world to not put that on women and girls. Yes. And what is it that we are doing, encouraging, equipping one another to just say, let's stop playing the game. And the moment you say that is not a mantle I'm going to carry, that is not a rule that I'm going to abide by, it doesn't change the fact that people might dock you or treat you differently. That's like external oppression. It does change the fact that you are in a prison of your own mind. And both of those are different forms of oppression. So hear me say, I'm not saying let's stop concentrating on external oppression. It is more saying like, what if we tried to stop the external oppression, but also where can we be taking responsibility for? You feel like life is absolutely impossible and you can't manage it all. And there's this mental load and there's all these expectations. And like, what if you just said no? What if you just said, like, I'm making these choices in my life, and that might mean that people look at me and they don't think that I'm the like perfect or aspirational or this or that. And you're just like, cool, because this is what's best for me and for my family, and this is what I have peace about.
I mean, the speech in general was one of those things that it was like, I think I agreed with 100% of it as best as you can, somebody who's not a woman. And somebody who obviously has friends and is close with people who've experienced much, if not all of that to some degree. I think that the, I think that it's one of those things that I think when you put things out at like a really broad gender level, it can often feel like similarly when you do it like a political level of like, this is what it's like for this particular situation, as opposed to like, well, here's how it is. Can I tell you how it is for Mary right now? Like, can I tell you what it is for Lindsay, my wife? Because when it's, if it's my wife or if it's my friend Liz, or if it's somebody that I'm close to and I'm like, hey, Dez is hurting right now, I can be like, oh, well, tell me about what's going on. Like, what can I do to both hear, to allow you to feel seen, to allow you to feel like there's access to resources. And if you want to ask for something, that's going to be met really, really well. I think that I simultaneously felt all that, but I also, when I keep it at a really macro level, it's hard for me to know what to do with it. I'm not trying to say what to solve in it, but I'm just trying to say what's my part? Like, what's my part in all of this? So I think that's one of the challenges with any of these kind of things when we bring it away from it. Because when Liz says to me like, hey, this really offended me when you said this, or this is the pressure that I'm feeling and this is how I feel like you're contributing to that, then I know what I can kind of do in that moment to like help or figure out. I think when it's big and broad and it's this, and it feels like there's a certain point that when it got to like point 39, I can understand where it's like, great, I'm just going to be Ken and I'm going to go sit in the corner and play my guitar and you guys do everything, I guess. Because we've obviously screwed up everything and I don't know how to fix it and it feels super overwhelming. And so I just want to say I'm sorry and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to play my guitar. And so it didn't like invite me into change. It actually felt more shaming. And I'm not opposed. I don't think all shame is always bad. Like shame serves a purpose at times. Mm-hmm. What I've seen more often is how shame actually imprisons us if we stay there for a really long period of time.
If I may introduce a concept and just talk really quickly, because I think you're totally right. The difference between at least how I define shame and guilt. Guilt being, man, I've done something wrong. And it's hurt people and I feel guilty about it. I was in the wrong. Shame is I am wrong. Like, I am bad. There is no tomorrow. There is no better choices because I'm just inherently flawed. Maybe I would probably say if men watched the Barbie movie and felt guilt I actually think that could be super helpful. Like the emotion of, wow, I contributed to women feeling forgotten, to women feeling like an accessory, to women feeling like they weren't welcome in spaces or spaces weren't created for them. I feel guilty about that, but that's actually a really beautiful emotion because, but there's almost like a hope, I think, in guilt that goes like, but tomorrow I could do differently. Tomorrow I could make a different choice and be aware of that. Versus shame, I do feel like is what leads you to go, screw this. It's just, if everything I do is only contributing to the problem, I'll just like stop trying to engage.
No, and all of that resonates. I think that it wasn't so much like screw this or like, it wasn't even like a mad. It was like a trying to figure out like, what can I do? And so even within guilt, like I can go like, oh, how have I contributed to any of that in any of my relationships? How have I created those that anything that to feel both normal or to feel enforced or to feel anything like that, I think makes a ton of sense. But so many of them came at such a hyperbolic level, or they came at such an extreme level that it wasn't able to go like, so when this happens, that's how that contributes to that. But I just believe so many people do respond to invitations. You wouldn't see it when you look out there. I mean, that's probably my biggest just like dive on the entire movie, is it felt a little bit like a political system of like one side either being completely in control or the other side being completely in control, as opposed to going like, what does it look like for us to flourish as opposed to one of you two to win? I had somebody say the other day this idea that like sometimes the political parties just feel like two divorced parents that aren't actually trying to like care for the child. They're just trying to get you to hate the other parent. And there was a part of that movie that felt like it was like trying to get you to hate the Kents, mm-hmm. or something like that. And I just am like, I just don't know what that does for actual human flourishing. I know it's interesting, and I know it can rile up emotions. And I know one of the least interesting things is compromise and actually coming to a really cool third way where both people feel like they can flourish. But that is the invitation that I think so many people want to respond to, are eager to respond to. And I think that was the part that at the end of the day, it sounds like you as well as my kids and me were just kind of hoping that the movie was going to introduce even just a glimmer of hope of like, what if it doesn't have to be either one of these ways, as opposed to like, nope, we're going to set the world back the way it was. And then she's going to bounce. And then, you know, I mean, so there was just a part of that I'm like, oh man, like it was so, I mean, I loved the songs. I loved all the different things. I actually loved them. I mean, even that whole entire thing about I Am Knuff really felt like a story that over the last 15 years has really been more of a story told to women as opposed to men. Mm-hmm. So the idea of telling that story to a man that you're not just defined by your identity, I absolutely loved. And I thought that was beautiful. And I think that if men think that they don't, if people think that men don't struggle with everything from body issues to comparative to a whole bunch of things, like they're just wrong. And it's like so many men that I know completely are comparing themselves to everyone constantly. And feeling that idea of like, whatever I've done, it's not enough. I've got to work harder. I've got to be better. And so there's something about within that movie that I just was like, oh, that just sucks that they left it there. Mm-hmm. And what I want is just a group of people that just are able to imagine and playfully create a third way and just go, let's not have that be the binary way we look at it.
I love it. Maybe our podcast should be called The Third Way Podcast. I honestly, there are literally 100 things that I want to keep saying. Things about the movie, things about gender dynamics, things about friendship and society and relationship and culture and how we have conversations and how we create third ways. But I think we're at time. So we're going to wrap this up. And who knows? Maybe you'll be hearing this. Maybe you won't. Maybe this was just a great conversation between me and my friend Ken. But maybe there'll be more, because I certainly feel like I could, if we did a podcast, I feel like we should just carve out like 8 hours and then we could just chunk them up, because I am like, this is it for me. All I want to do all day is have conversations like this and somehow figure out how to make them work. Okay, y'all, thank you so much for joining us here on this unique episode of Plucking Up. If you're actually listening to it because it came out into the universe and you enjoyed this conversation, it would actually mean a lot to me. It would be super helpful for me to know, hey, I listened and it was interesting. Or honestly, say I listened and can we go back to interviews? That's great too. And because I'm going to keep having these conversations. Absolutely. I just might not record them and publish them for you. All right. Well, thanks for joining us on this special episode of Plucking Up. I appreciate you. And until next time, stay plucky.